Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to the Tech Meme Ride Home for Thursday, August 16th, 2018. I'm Brian McCullough. Today, Amazon might buy a chain of movie theaters. Why the Saudis invest the way they do. Twitter pisses everyone off because what else is new? And reviews of the Note 9 and Android Pi are in. Here's what you missed today in the world of tech. I guess if you're Jeff Bezos and you really, really want your Amazon Prime Video to become a Netflix-level player, and you're willing to do things like buy Whole Foods simply because you want to break into groceries in a big way, then why not do something bold like get into movie theaters? According to Bloomberg, Amazon is in talks to acquire Landmark Theaters, a chain of about 50-plus movie theaters that tends to focus on indie movie fare. Landmark is owned by Mark Cuban and Todd Wagner, who's Cuban's partner from way back in the Broadcast.com days. But Amazon is apparently not the only suitor, and supposedly Netflix is sniffing around a theater chain purchase as well. Interesting bit of history here. Even though this wouldn't be the biggest acquisition in the world by any means, it might actually trigger a historically significant bit of antitrust law. The so-called Paramount Pictures Consent Decree came out in 1948 as the result of a Supreme Court case that said film studios could no longer own the movie theaters their films were shown in. That decree effectively destroyed the classic Hollywood studio system as it functioned during the heyday of movies when, for example, during the Great Depression, fully 90% of the American public attended at least one movie every single week. The law is now considered to be outdated and anachronistic, of course, and U.S. antitrust officials have recently signaled that the judgment could be terminated, which would be good for Amazon because the obvious play here is if you've paid $250 million for a Lord of the Rings adaptation, you might want the option of showing it on the big screen. As Josh Constein tweeted, here comes Amazon having red carpet premieres for Prime Video originals at its own movie theaters. And Howard Lenzon said, quote, I imagine Amazon will have Prime and a Prime Media Plus for unlimited moviegoing, end quote. Which, hey, just because MoviePass can't pull it off doesn't mean there's no scenario where movie theater subscriptions can work. Since I mentioned the rumors yesterday that some of Uber's biggest investors want it to exit the self-driving car game because they want the company to sharply pare back losses ahead of an expected IPO next year, I did want to briefly note that Uber released its financials yesterday, and it's basically the same story we've come to expect from them. Revenues were up at an amazing clip, but losses were widening. Revenue was up 51% year over year to $2.7 billion in Q2, but losses came to $404 million, up from $304 million just in Q1. Overall gross bookings increased 41% year over year to $12 billion. As always, Uber is not required to disclose its financial results, but it's done so in the past few quarters in order to smooth the way for that expected IPO. Uber had no comment on the information's reporting about calls to sell off its self-driving car unit, but if the information's reporting and math are correct, and that unit contributes as much as $200 million a quarter to Uber's losses, then there you go. If you got rid of the self-driving car unit, you'd cut the losses in half just by taking that out of the equation. And following up on the recent stories about Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund possibly helping Tesla go private, did you know that that same fund has a pretty big stake in Uber as well? The Wall Street Journal has a timely profile up of the Saudi Public Investment Fund, the $225 billion that it has, so certainly plenty of money to play with, and the Saudis' overall investment strategy. As I suggested earlier this week, it's all about, as the journal puts it, moving the country from a staid petrostate to a technology-focused economy. Quote, officials at the Saudi fund are seeking Tesla's expertise to tie into broader plans to create new industries in solar power generation, battery storage, and electric vehicle production. The Wall Street Journal has reported the fund, which is in talks with banks to raise billions of its own debt, hopes its investments in technology will act as a hedge against the decline of the energy sector. The PIF's first major international technology investment in Uber Technologies was hatched in 2016 after a barbecue in Riyadh attended by PIF's Mr. Rumayyan and then Uber policy head and former White House official David Plouffe. People familiar with the deal said. Uber's then chief, Travis Kalanick, subsequently visited Saudi Arabia to meet Crown Prince Mohammed, and the PIF bought a $3.5 billion stake within weeks, people familiar with the deal said. The PIF soon after made an even bigger wager than Uber. It committed $45 billion into SoftBank's $100 billion Vision Fund. That deal was famously agreed upon in a 45-minute conversation between Crown Prince Mohammed and Mr. Son, before the two sides then spent months agreeing on the details, end quote. As with everything else lately, it all comes back to Masa Son eventually. If you're a heavy Twitter user, you've probably seen the news or at least the frustrated tweets. But as we've known for a while now, Twitter is today ending support of its legacy API, which is heavily used by third-party Twitter apps like my go-to favorite Tweetbot. This move essentially breaks key functionality of these third-party apps, and of course the developers of these apps aren't happy, but nor, frankly, are users. I could run down the whole history of what Twitter is doing, but I'll point you instead to a nice summation by Sarah Perez in TechCrunch. Twitter today released an email explaining the rationale behind the changes, saying, quote, "We are facing technical and business constraints we can't ignore and need to turn these off," end quote. Sarah and a lot of other people are calling straight up BS on this, and I'm going to straight up editorialize here and add my own two cents. Twitter is like a classic drug dealer. Those of us who are hooked on their product are in so deep, Twitter knows they can repeatedly kick us and we'll just come back for more. I'm personally waiting and seeing how broken Tweetbot really is today. I've never quite taken to TweetDeck, and of course, Twitter famously depreciated their native Mac app recently. I can tell you this, if Twitter's endgame really is me coming to their stupid webpage to engage with their product, that is pretty much the one scenario in which I can guarantee I would use Twitter as a product way, way less.
When you go through airport security, there's one line where the TSA agent checks your ID and another line where a machine scans your bag. The same thing happens in enterprise security, but instead of passengers and luggage, it's end users and their devices. These days, most companies are pretty good at the first part of the equation where they check user identity. But user devices can roll right through authentication without getting inspected at all. In fact, 47% of companies allow unmanaged, untrusted devices to access their data. That means an employee can log in from a laptop that has its firewall turned off and hasn't been updated in 6 months, or worse, that laptop might belong to a bad actor using employee credentials. Collide finally solves the device trust problem. Collide ensures that no device can log into your Okta-protected apps unless it passes your security checks. Plus, you can use Collide on devices without MDM, like your Linux fleet, contractor devices, and every BYOD phone and laptop in your company. Visit collide.com/ride to watch a demo and see how it all works. That's KOLIDE.com/ride, collide.com/ride. How do you make a password that's strong enough so no one will guess it, and it's impossible for you to forget, and do it for 100 different sites, and make it so everyone in your company can do the same without ever needing to reset them? Sounds impossible unless you have 1Password. More than any other product I've ever told you about, I can vouch 1,000% for 1Password. I can't live without it. 1Password makes strong security easy for your people and gives you the visibility you need to take action when you need to. Any device, anytime, 1Password lets you securely switch between iPhone, Android, Mac, and PC with convenient features like autofill for quick sign-ins. All you have to remember is the one strong account password that protects everything else. Your logins, your credit cards, secure notes, or the office Wi-Fi password. 1Password's award-winning password manager is trusted by millions of users and over 100,000 businesses from IBM to Slack. It beat out 40 other options to become Wirecutter's top pick for password managers. Right now, my listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/ride for your growing business. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/ride. Don't let security slow your business down. Go to 1Password.com/ride.
I had heard some rumors about this, but now both BuzzFeed and the New York Times are reporting on it. Remember the rumors of Google's plans to create a censorship-friendly search product for the Chinese market? Well, a lot of Google employees are not happy about this, and they're getting organized. The New York Times says about 1,000 Google employees have signed a letter demanding more transparency about Google's plans. Quote, "Currently, we do not have the information required to make ethically informed decisions about our work, our projects, and our employment. We urgently need more transparency, a seat at the table, and a commitment to clear and open processes. Google employees need to know what we're building," end quote. The letter is circulating on Google's internal communications network. If you'll recall, this is the second time this year Google employees have organized against rumored company plans after 4,000 employees signed a petition and about a dozen resigned in protest. Google eventually agreed earlier this year not to renew its Project Maven drone contract with the Pentagon. The Galaxy Note 9 reviews are in, and I'd say they're basically warm to mild. In general, people like the performance upgrades, are impressed with the new S Pen functionality. But since it's shipping with Android Oreo and the Bixby Smart Assistant is apparently still a bit of a mess, the reviews are generally saying if you're a Note fan already, this is a good upgrade. But if you're not a Note fan, eh. Over at Engadget, Sherilyn Lowe says, quote, "The Galaxy 9 lives up to the lofty expectations. In addition to a huge battery, large screen, and generous onboard storage, Samsung taught the old S Pen a few new tricks that should make the stylus more useful to a wide audience. You'll have a hard time finding a phone that does more, and though I'm reluctant to recommend any device that costs this much, I have a feeling power users will want to get their hands on this thing. The Note 9 has a few minor quirks, but overall it feels more than the sum of its parts," end quote. The Engadget score of the Note 9 is 92 out of 100. Over at Gizmodo, Sam Rutherford says that you'll definitely feel the Note 9's $1,000 price tag, and he means that in a good and a bad way. Quote, "What does $1,000 really get you? Here goes. The Note 9 boasts the biggest, most captivating screen, blazing performance, top-tier photography, and some of the best battery life you can get in a phone. Then you pile on things like the S Pen, DeX mode, massive optional storage, more RAM than an average laptop, and important supporting components like a headphone jack, wireless charging, IP68 water resistance, and more, and what you get is a big phone that's at the top of its class. Nothing else out right now has as many tools, tricks, or features as what Samsung smashed into the Note 9. And while its price tag means this isn't a device for everyone, for the people who want to push the limits of what a phone can really do, the Note 9 is here to give them that opportunity," end quote. And at BGR, Zach Epstein says his problem is that the Galaxy Note 9 is just a faster Note 8 with some new features. Quote, "That might seem a bit blunt, but it's important. Apple reached the $1,000 price point with a brand new smartphone that was a complete reimagining of the iPhone. In fact, Apple reused the same designs on the iPhone 6, iPhone 6S, and iPhone 7, so the iPhone 10 was actually the first truly new iPhone in more than 3 years when it was released last November. Apple fans were starved for a major redesign, and they got one that's packed with new tech and novel features. Meanwhile, the $1,000 Galaxy Note 9 doesn't have a new design, and it only has a few notable new features. Finally, as I just said, the Note 9 doesn't get the latest version of Android, but real quick, because it's related, I wanted to share with you Dieter Bohn's review of the new Android OS, Android Pi. You can only get Pi basically on Android phones made by Google, and it won't trickle down to other new Android phones until next year. But Dieter wants everyone to clamor for this upgrade now because he says it's pretty great. There's great notification management, among other things, even if the move towards gestures is complicated and not exactly smooth. Quote, although a few of the promised features aren't shipping or are still in beta, I think this version of Android is good enough that users should demand the update for their phones. The many features in Android 9 Pi cohere into something that feels more polished than the last few versions of Android. There's a lot to like and fewer excuses than ever for updates not to come out for existing phones in a timely manner. Android 9 Pi is a great update, and I wouldn't want to go back. I love that it's chock full of ideas about how an operating system can be smarter, even though some of them, pardon the inevitable pun, don't feel quite fully baked, end quote. I've already been bitching about this extensively on Twitter, so I'll save you the whole saga. TLDR, I bought a kitchen table for our new house on IKEA.com, ordered home delivery, did not know what everyone else in the world seemingly knew already, which was one does not simply walk into order IKEA delivery. Big mistake. Not only did the table never come, IKEA says they cannot tell me when or even if it will come. This has been going on for 6 days now. They already charged my credit card, of course. They won't even let me cancel the order because they don't know where it is. Yesterday, the 1-800 number was down completely, so I couldn't even subject myself to their runaround for another afternoon. So a huge multinational corporation has stolen my money and then ghosted on me. And apparently they do this to people on the regs. But what did I say about Twitter kicking us and we'd still come back for more? Guess what I'm doing this Saturday? Renting a truck and going to IKEA. I know, I should never ever do business with IKEA again, but I need a kitchen table, guys. I need a cheap, mid-century modern kitchen table for less than $400. Pretty pathetic. I probably deserve whatever poor treatment I get, right? Talk to you guys tomorrow.